Rockland, USA. From Rockland, USA studios in Washington, D.C., this is Rock on the Money. Time to talk about saving, investing, and protecting all those hard-earned monies. We're here to give you ideas, answer your questions, keep you updated on your path to retirement and financial independence without any fees or commissions. It's kind of what we do here. I'm Craig with Amanda, your financial coaches, and we're so thankful you've joined us. You can call us 24 hours a day, 989-888-ROCK, 989-888-7625. Leave a voicemail or text us with your questions or comments, and we'll answer them on the show. If you're too shy for all that, you can always email us to podcast@rocklandusa.com. Hello, Amanda.
Hello, Craig.
How are things with you?
Things are great. I'm now like a real estate mogul.
It's just amazing watching how you operate. You motivate me, even though I'm doing well. It's just like, man, I never thought about going that direction. I'm scared to do real estate.
It's scary for sure. And you know what's funny, though, is I'm always doing something. And so sometimes I'm like, oh, it'd be so nice if I had a day to just relax. And then one time, like a week ago, we had nothing to do on a Sunday, and I was like twitching. I didn't know what to do. So I spent the morning working on, you know, things that I could just work on and, you know, getting my taxes in order and things like that. But even by afternoon, when I had run out of little projects, I didn't know what to do with myself. So I clearly can't stop working, even if I wanted to.
Well, I convert about 300 questions a day that I get from my coaching stuff over to you from the group. They're always emailing me, and I try and hit them all. You know, I'm trying to, I wake up in the middle of the night answering questions. I got to stop doing that. So
you do have to stop. Yeah. They need to call us or, you know,
Well, we'll get into that. I need them to start calling 989-888-ROCK and asking the questions there. I would love to start playing these questions on here. But what we got on this episode?
Well, we're going to start out with some social media questions. Some of those questions that you may or may not have taken a look at in the middle of the night, Craig.
No, I read them. All right.
Turn your alerts off. We're going to continue our series in the Dave Ramsey Baby Steps. Today, we're talking about baby step number 4. Mm. And then our Savvy Savings segment today is all about taxes. Oh, it is tax time.
Yes, it is. Like I do mine this week.
Yes.
I'm only waiting on one more form. Actually, I think I just got it. So.
Okay. All right. Time to start. Well, we'll talk about that later today.
Perfect. I got some questions to ask you about that. So, we'll have to help each other. Anyway, hey, I'm going to throw you a question.
Okay.
I literally just got this question. Literally.
Okay. And literally.
Literally. This topic upsets me more than probably, well, there's a lot of topics to upset. This one.
Yeah, you're very easy to upset.
But this, but this topic really upsets me. I don't like this. So anyway, I'm going to throw this to you because maybe you'll be calmer in your answer. Okay. Ever hear of universal life insurance as an investment?
Yeah, I think we talked about this before, but I'm glad we have a chance to circle back on it.
I'm fanning myself right now, trying to calm down. I was in a 2-hour meeting about it today. It seems like it's really just life insurance. Amanda, we're going to let you answer.
Okay. So yeah, it is life insurance. Universal life insurance is a type of life insurance and it lasts your entire life. So into your 90s and beyond. So it's different than term life insurance. Sometimes it's known as cash value life insurance. So sometimes people are convinced that, you know, it's a good investment because they can cash out. But that's because it has a savings account inside the policy or alongside the policy. So how this works is you pay into a savings account whenever your insurance premium is due. So the premium is the monthly cost that, you know, keeps the insurance going. And then whatever you pay above and beyond the premium, which is already built into your payment, that's going to go into like a savings, like a regular bank account. Mm-hmm. And then that portion and just that portion that's in excess of your premium is your cash value and you're free to take some of that out. But it's not quite as easy as just doing a withdrawal at your bank. They can vary quite a bit. And whole life returns only average about 2%. So we've talked a lot in the past about investments that only have an average return of 2% and how it's barely keeping up and sometimes not even keeping up with inflation. And so you're losing money there. In my opinion, and again, this is just strictly Amanda's opinion, it's a terrible investment. There are a lot of bad things about universal life insurance, but the worst is what happens to that cash value when you die.
What happens to that, Amanda, when you die?
So if you die and you have not extracted any of that cash value before your death, the only payment your family will get is the death benefit from the insurance.
What?
Any cash value you've built up will go back to the insurance company. It just disappears. Poof.
Wow. Who benefited from that?
Oh, the insurance companies. It's a huge racket. Shocker. My opinion.
No, not no. Fact, I think it's pretty much fact, but go ahead. You're the lawyer. I'm being more, go ahead.
And that's why I'm scared of saying the fees you'll pay for the cash value life insurance are just astronomical. There are fees to have the insurance in the first place, fees to cover commissions, and fees to cover expenses for the insurance company. And the thing is, because of these crazy high fees, you'll build zero cash value in the first 3 years. Zero.
Wow. Zero?
Zero.
Zero.
There's absolutely a reason insurance companies love selling this insurance, because they're making way more money than you do if they do. So I live in a house here in Tampa that we purchased from someone who was in an older age bracket.
Okay.
And I'm still getting some of his mail every now and then. And there are a number of times I've received these invitations to come to a steak dinner where we're going to tell you about this amazing insurance. Yeah. So you'll see those a lot. Well, the steak is absolutely free because they're trying to sign you up as an insurance customer. So they can keep you in a room for a couple of hours, like this 2-hour presentation. Yeah. It's like a timeshare, right? Like you have to sit through the entire presentation, you eat their steak, and then you have this psychological reciprocity that they've given you a steak. So you certainly should give them something, right?
Absolutely.
And they get you to sign up for the plan. But for all the reasons I've mentioned and more, I would not recommend it to anyone in my family. And I don't subscribe to that. So I really am struggling to think of a situation where it's appropriate.
I liken the 2-hour presentations that they do to like going to a 2-hour presentation for a timeshare.
Yeah, exactly.
It's almost the same thing. You're signing your death warrant. I know that's not what you would say as a lawyer, but for me, it's not good. What we say before, insurance should be insurance, investment should be investment. You should not use insurance as an investment.
Yeah, I mean, there are much better ways to put money away into a savings account.
You mean like a S&P 500 index fund?
Or even a savings account. 10%?
I mean, I don't know how many times we need to tell people this. Yeah. We try to make it simple for you guys. And this kind of thing that's going on, and I know where this occurred. It's a place that I'm very familiar with. And I saw the flyers laying around. I saw the email go out.
It totally upset me.
No, no, this is at a workplace.
Oh, yeah.
These people are allowed to come into people's workplaces. Yeah. And the employees are actually telling me they think it's an endorsement from the company. If it takes 2 hours to explain a product, I don't like it.
Yeah.
Term life insurance takes about 5 minutes to explain it.
Right.
It's so simple and it only cost pennies. It's so cheap.
And if you have people who are relying on you to provide for them and, you know, you are a breadwinner in your home, then it absolutely is a smart idea to cover yourself in the event that, you know, you pass away untimely and leave behind a family who are relying on you to make those payments. Then a life insurance policy is, you know, really valuable and term is the way to go. When you are in your 90s, I challenge you to think about anyone who's relying on you to pay the bills every month for them.
Right.
There isn't a use for it.
I'm trying to think how to word this. The point where life insurance you need the most
it's when you're younger.
Is when you're younger and you have kids.
Yeah.
Because someone has if you die, you have to pay for them to be taken care of. Your amount of life insurance actually decreases over time.
Right.
Amanda, right now, I don't have life insurance. I'm self-insured.
Right, because you don't have any dependents who are relying on your income, right?
Right. And I don't have any liabilities. And this is part of that debt-free thing that we keep talking about. If you don't have any of that and you've now built up enough wealth that generates income for other people, you don't need life insurance. And that's something I need people to understand. It's just something I didn't realize as I build wealth. Actually, life gets cheaper. Does that make sense? It's weird. It never occurred to me, oh, I don't need that to pay that. I don't need to pay that. So I actually have less expenses because I have wealth. And I don't think a lot of people talk about that enough. But anyway.
All right. Well, we have a question for you, Craig.
What? I kind of like asking you all the questions. It's easier.
Yeah. All right. Not time for you to think on your feet. What are your thoughts on rolling over an IRA from previous employers that I have with a financial advisor who is charging me 1.5% fee?
I'm
the Empower advisor said Southwest covers all the fees in our 401k. I am about 6 years away from retirement. Craig, what do you think?
Does
Southwest cover all the fees in 401ks plus this amazing match?
I'm still choking over the 1.5% fee that they're paying an advisor because you know about me and advisors.
Yeah.
It's almost as bad as universal life. This is my other topic I don't like. But anyway.
Okay, but we have a whole show to do, Craig.
So I know. So let's
limit
this
your
quick.
Rant.
Okay, number one, if you leave an employer and go work for somewhere else, you should never leave your 401k at the other employer. Don't you agree? You should bring it with
your money
or roll it over to our favorite.
As long as it's eligible for a rollover, take it with you. If it's not, and you would end up paying fees and penalties, then, you know, that would be different.
And you can always
It depends, Craig.
The lawyer. And you can always go to our favorites, Vanguard, Schwab, or Fidelity. No, we don't get kickbacks from them. They are the low-cost providers. And if you call them, they are more than willing to help you bring that money over to that one location.
Okay? For free. Usually
for free. And they will help you through. It's almost like changing a cell phone plan. It's that easy, Amanda. It's crazy.
Except you don't have an activation fee.
Right. There's no activation fee. Correct. But they will tell you if they are able to do it. You just got to tell them the account number. They can find out easily. All the banks and everybody's connected. Mm-hmm. They can help you with that. But you should.
Yeah. Or if you have like a stray, and like when I was much younger, like my first tax return I did as an adult, H&R Block convinced me to open one of their IRAs and it just was floating out there for decades. You can even roll that over into your current IRA or 401k.
Yeah. And the second part of this question about the fees in the 401k, we're going to actually talk about this in Baby Step 4 a little bit. But really quickly, because I want to drag it in. I want to get into Baby Step 4. But when you're usually with a larger company, your 401k plans are more rock solid and they don't have fees. When you're with a very small business and they somehow came up with a 401k plan, those you need to be very cautious about because they typically will have higher fees unless the employer decides to cover them. Larger corporations, the Fortune 500s and stuff like that, they typically will cover all those fees as a benefit to employees. So, the company that you mentioned, yes, they are covering all the fees and you're fine there. So
at least as of the date of this recording.
Yeah. The lawyer again. So this is actually a 401k that you are safe to max out your 401k before you start the IRA. Now, if you're with a smaller company and you have a lot of fees with your 401k, you only do the company match. Then you go ahead and start the IRAs after that. So but we're going to talk about that in Baby Step 4 a little bit. So
speaking of which,
yes,
it's time for baby step number 4.
Oh, well, fine. That was a great segue question.
Good job. Yeah.
All right. So we did baby step 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah. So let me recap.
Let's do it. Go ahead.
Yeah. So baby step 1, put together your first small emergency fund. So we're aiming for $1,000 unless you make less than what, $25,000 a year?
Yeah. Something about that. Yeah.
And then your goal then would be $500 in emergency fund.
Mm-hmm.
Step 2, snowball to get rid of all of your debt except your mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
Step 3.
This is a test.
Step three is to build up your real emergency fund, the 3 to 6 months of expenses. I spaced for a minute there, Craig.
I know. It's okay. If people had any idea what it takes to record one of these podcasts, sometimes you just get like, oh, where are we at now?
Yeah, but, I know what it is. I just totally spaced.
I know.
Too many things in my brain today.
Yeah. You're way beyond baby step three. So so now we've accomplished paying off all of our debts except the mortgage, and we have a fully funded emergency fund. We are sitting pretty at this point.
We are finally comfortable. The elephant is off of our chest. We can breathe.
You know what? It is okay to slow it down a little bit. You just kick some major butt. Yeah. To be able to be debt-free except your mortgage, and you have 3 to 6 months of money sitting in money market fund that you can cover any emergency expense that comes along. Your car broke down, your HVAC broke down, and you have to replace the refrigerator. All you have to do is write a check.
Write a check. You know, I read a book that said, if you can write a check for it, it's not a problem.
Yep. And that's what we've done now. So now we're up to baby
step four. Your problems go away.
Yeah. Now life is a lot better. What are we going to do now? Now start setting ourselves up for retirement. Before I get into this, really quick, 60 seconds, put me on the timer. A lot of people that come to me for the coaching, the Ramsey financial coaching that I do.
Yeah.
They ask me about 401k stuff and they're shocked when I ask them about their debt and stuff like that. And they tell me they have 30,000 of this, 10,000 of that. And they came to me with a 401k question. Yeah, but we're not going to do that. And they're shocked that I'm having them go work on debt first.
Right, right.
So, you know, a lot of people need to understand we have to build the foundation first before we can start worrying about moving forward. And a lot of people are having a hard time understanding that. This stuff works, people. Please.
Yeah, I mean, and that's why we, you know, our mantra is save, invest, protect. And that's why save is number one. You have to save before you can invest.
Right. Yeah, and it's just the way it works. Putting money in a 401k while you have $100,000 in debt, it doesn't work. You may think it does in your simple math in your head. It doesn't work that way, people. You can't go into retirement with this debt. The easiest way to do it is knock it out. Yep. And then set yourself up for retirement. But never go back. You can't go back to debt. Having debt in retirement will destroy you. I'm telling you. It's regret. Anyway, baby step four. Invest 15% of your income in retirement.
At least, right?
Minimum. At least. Now, we have a lot of people that work for companies that listen to us that also get a company match.
So the match would be 15% of your personal income, and then the match is icing on that cake.
That's what I do. Now, I know there's people out there that will do, like there's one company where we have a lot of listeners from. They get almost a 10% match. It's like 9.3%, which is amazing.
Yeah.
So a lot of them will do 10% and they figure, well, I'm getting that. So now I'm at 19.3%.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if you can't afford 15%, because sometimes that's a big chunk.
Especially if you're a new employee, you know?
Yeah.
You know, you're not making a lot initially. You're brand new and it takes about 5 years to be fully vested. I get that.
Yeah.
But for me personally, I always believe you do your 15%, whatever happens, whether you're getting profit sharing, which is a whole other thing, and company match, that is all extra. I do not include that in my 15%. That's what I would recommend. That's just me. What do you think?
I agree. I totally agree. So I would put that. So where would you put it?
Okay. So as we just talked about in that other social media question, let's say you're with a large company, a major Fortune 500 company. I would say 95%. Here comes the lawyer part of you. A majority of them out there have quality 401k plans because they're a very large company. They want to treat their employees well. They don't like losing their employees. They cover all the fees typically with your 401k plans. You should always call HR and find out what are all the fees associated with it. Are there any hidden fees? But typically, you're pretty well set with the bigger companies. Those places, I recommend maxing out your 401k there. The order of investing should be your 401k, IRA, HSA, blah, 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 blah. I think some people call those ladders, investment ladder. On the flip side, if you're with a small company with not that many employees, typically, I'm keeping it very general, Amanda, for you.
Because I might disagree with you here.
I know. But they may have higher fees because the company is not covering for them, or the 401k provider is not one of the major financial companies like T. Rowe Price or Merrill Lynch or Fidelity or Schwab. So those fees could be a lot higher. So in those cases, if you have a company match, just do the company match and then go over to the IRA at our favorites at Vanguard, Schwab, and Fidelity.
And when you say IRA, you mean Roth IRA.
Yes, we should always do a Roth IRA. I know you don't like the word always, but if you're going to open an IRA, now if you have a 401k, some companies, whether it's a 457 or 401k, you may have the option to have a Roth at those companies as well. Now, this is where, if you have a high income, some people want to do a traditional 401k because you need to lower your tax exposure, right?
Some of us might be in that situation.
I mean, those of us that are in six figures, they'll worry about the taxes further down the road. That's a that's actually a popular strategy as well. For other people, you may want to just lock into today's tax rates and do the Roth 401k. So it depends on what your company or your income amounts are. So if you're in the six figures, you may want to bring it down because you don't want to go in the next tax bracket.
Yeah.
So as far as what should you invest in within these 401ks or your IRA?
Oh, let's beat this dead horse.
Oh, yeah. So there's two different ways. And Dave Ramsey, Clark Howard, everybody is okay with this. And it's what we've been saying for how long we've been talking about it. This is what Warren Buffett tells you to do. All the billionaires tell you to do this, but people still want to fight this. I don't know why. An S&P 500 index fund. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people actually don't understand what an S&P 500 is. All that is the Standard & Poor's, and they adjust this every year. It's the 500 best companies by market capitalization worth in America. These are America's best 500 companies. Why would you not want to invest in America's best 500 companies? And they readjust this every year. So at the top of the list, Amanda, we have Apple, Microsoft, Amazon. You're getting all those companies.
So without having to do any of the research into all of their,
you're getting Boeing. Yeah. Well, I don't know. Boeing is a good example there, but you're getting all the airlines. You're getting all the technology companies. A lot of technology companies are here in America. That's what you're buying. It's a great. There's nothing better, and you do get 8 to 10% per year long term. And if you go this route, you cannot change in and out of this fund. Stick with it. That's how it works. If you want to do the Dave Ramsey thing where he talks about having four different funds, which I do not do because I don't have them available to me, growth and income, growth, aggressive growth, and international. And here are some examples of those categories. Growth and income would be your Vanguard 500 index fund, your S&P 500 fund. Growth funds could be something called like a Vanguard Capital Opportunity Fund. You can go Google it yourself. The aggressive growth would be like the Vanguard Tax Managed Small Cap Fund. And international would be the Vanguard International Explorer Fund.
And so you know what I've noticed, Craig? So my company offers a 401k through Fidelity. And we have a list of options, like you've posted some of the options for some of the companies you work for. And they are actually already categorized into what type of fund it is. So you can very easily see, oh, this is identified as a growth fund.
Yes.
Or this is identified as an aggressive fund.
Absolutely.
So you can already get, you know, an idea of what it is before you even have to click in and see more details.
Right. So the whole idea is S&P 500 index fund, 80% of all funds that try to beat S&P 500 cannot do that. Of actively managed funds, only 20% of funds can beat the S&P 500 index fund. So why not? If you walked into a casino, Amanda, and you had an 80% chance of winning or a 20% chance of winning, which way would you go?
I'd go to the craps table.
Which, you know what? That right there shows me you know exactly what's going on, because that's the only game I go play.
Yeah, that's the only one you have a chance at.
Yeah, I know. Man, okay. You're impressing me all the time. But wouldn't you just go to the 80% chance table?
I would bet on 80, yeah.
Right, which would be your S&P 500 index fund.
That's right.
If you are going to pick these other funds, like Dave Ramsey talks about, you're supposed to find the ones that do consistently beat the S&P 500 index fund. It just takes some more work. So what we keep saying is, for beginners and most of you out there, just do the index, and as you learn over time, then you can go start doing your own research, and then you can go try and find those other funds. But please don't get
beyond. But what should we avoid like the plague, Craig? Let's remind everyone, which ones are we avoiding like the plague? Target date funds.
Target date funds, yes. Anything. Yeah. Currently, in this environment for the last 10 years, anything with bonds in them, which is the target date. I don't like target date funds. Mm-hmm. And we do need to do a segment coming up. I'll explain the history of how that showed up, where they came from. Companies went to Congress to get this approved. If you have to have Congress approve something, a product for you, and they got heavy lobbied for that, do you think that's probably a good thing you should be investing in? Kind of like maybe. Universal life.
Yeah.
Where you're basically in the same neighborhood. And if I explain the history of it, you'll probably think completely different about target date funds.
There is a history. Are you going to post a list of the recommendations?
Yeah. So I found some people who went through and tried to find some common, like Fidelity, Schwab, and Vanguard funds that fit the Dave Ramsey categories. So I'm going to post that on the website. And also in the show notes for this podcast. So if you have one of those podcast players that can show the show notes right in there, do that. Or go to rockonthemoney.com and look at our episode right there, and you'll see the notes right there. And I'll list all the funds right there. So you can go look at them if you would like. Just something for you to start learning on your road to financial independence.
Perfect. You know, you did mention earlier about smaller business 401k.
Yes.
So I thought this would be a good time to talk about SEP IRAs. Craig.
Absolutely. This is something you know a lot about.
I do, because I've been running my own company for a number of years, self-employed, before I took on this job with the company I'm with now. So a SEP IRA, you might hear it as SEP. It's SEP. That's a self-employed plan, it's a simplified plan is what it is. The contribution limits are much higher than your typical Roth IRA. Mm-hmm. So for salaried workers, it's a pretty easy calculation. You can contribute 20, not you, but your company can contribute 25% of your compensation to a SEP IRA for you.
Wow.
If you're like a self-employed entrepreneur, though, for example, or like you, it's just you running your own business, like you have your own LLC, that's what I did for a while, or you're just like a sole proprietor, it's a bit more complicated to do the calculation, and you certainly would want to involve your tax advisor in this calculation. Every year at the end of the year, I was asking my tax advisor, how much can I put in a SEP this year?
Yeah.
Because it reduces the income, the pass-through income for your individual company. So it's a benefit both to your small business to reduce that taxable income, and also to you, the individual, to grow your retirement. So if you are self-employed as an entrepreneur, then it takes the gross income, but then removes both the SEP IRA contribution and a portion of your self-employment tax, the part that's allocable to the employer's payroll tax liability. After you run all those numbers, the limit is 20% of adjusted gross profit.
Wow.
So it's a much more complicated calculation if you're not a simple employee of a small business. If you're the owner and doing your own plan, then it's more complicated. So the maximum, though, get this, Craig, maximum contribution is $56,000 in 2019.
Yeah, that I think that's the part I like the most, because normally it was at $19,500
in a 401k. I don't know. So they are different than 401ks and many other plans in that employees don't make the contributions of their own. It's entirely up to the employer alone to set up and put money in the SEP IRAs.
Oh, okay.
So it does Yeah, so it limits your ability for average workers to use SEP IRAs, and it's typically only small business owners and self-employed workers who take advantage of the maximum contribution. So, like, if you have your own company and you want to show not as much profit for that company, you would then invest in a SEP IRA. But again, mm-hmm. it's using that complicated complication. So definitely get a tax advisor involved. One other small note here is small business owners with employees can't just use a SEP IRA for their own benefit. One of the rules with the SEP IRA is that the percentage of salary that you contribute on behalf of each employee must be consistent across the board.
Oh.
Yeah. So let's say you wanted to contribute 25% of your income as the owner, you would also have to make a contribution from the company funds to each employee's SEP IRA for 25% of their income.
Ah, what if I was the only employee?
Then you can do it up to whatever that maximum is, either the 20 or 25%, depending on what your tax advisor tells you, up to the maximum of $56,000.
I don't mean to trip you up, but if I was a sole proprietor, mm-hmm. could I do this?
Yes.
Wow.
Speak to your tax advisor.
Oh, of course.
Yes.
Ms. Lawyer.
Yes. I am not awesome. A tax advisor.
I know. Yeah.
The other option that I just wanted to throw out there that some people may or may not know about is what's called a TSP IRA.
Mm, yeah.
It's a thrift savings plan. I think I got that right. This is an IRA option that's available to military members and also certain government employees, so even civilian government employees. It's very similar to a Roth 401k, not the Roth IRA. Mm-hmm. There are no income limits. Like, you have income limits with the Roth IRA.
Right.
You know, once you hit a certain income, you can no longer contribute to the Roth unless you do a backdoor. Mm-hmm. There's also the contribution limits are higher. It's at the $19,500 limit right now.
Okay, great.
So that's another option for the military and government employees. And you can do this in addition to the other Roth IRA you have.
Nice.
So it's another way to have another bucket.
Oh, so like I love you could,
if you're an individual, like sole proprietor, you can have a SEP IRA and a Roth IRA. So yeah, I mean, if you're running out of place buckets to put your money when you're looking at your 15% of your household income and you're running out of room and you don't have a 401k available to you and you've already maxed out your Roth IRA, these are some other options to help you, round out your step four.
Awesome. That was great. Boy, my head hurts. That's a lot of information.
Yeah.
We covered it, though. But yeah, you know what it's time for?
A break.
A break. And Savvy Savings coming. And we're talking about what in Savvy Savings?
We're going to keep talking about taxes.
I do need help with taxes because it's so complicated time. Now. Mm-hmm. All right. Coming up next, this is Rock on the Money. RockOnTheMoney.com is the website where you can find all of our podcasts. You can listen to them directly on the website, Amanda. All the show notes and links of everything we talk about in each podcast are listed right there. Great articles and everything. And I'm busy redesigning the website. It's going to be a lot cleaner.
You keep saying that. When is it going to be done?
Well, it's designed so we have multiple podcasts because, yeah, we got some surprises coming up. We got other podcasts coming. Well, it all has to do about, I mean, it's all about Amanda.
I doubt that.
Oh, it is. Trust me. You know what's coming. Anyway, I think it's really cool. It's really good. All right. Anyway, let's get to Savvy Savings with our princess. Are you the princess or the queen?
I'm pretty sure I'm the queen.
Yes. All right. What we got?
Well, we're going to talk about taxes today, so I don't know what's more dry and boring than having a lawyer talk about taxes, but here we are.
All right.
Okay, so let's start out with a little bit of background and an overview. So many of you know the Tax Cuts and Job Act, also known as TCJA because it's so catchy, upended tax rules to a significant extent in 2018. So the IRS, the tax code used to provide for personal exemptions that could further decrease your taxable income, but this Tax Cut and Jobs Act eliminated those exemptions from the tax code.
So for example,
the rules for deductions, adjustments to income, and tax credits that we're going to talk about here are applicable beginning in the tax year 2018 and going forward. And you're probably thinking, why are you talking about 2018? We're doing taxes for 2019. You'll see. We'll talk about that in a second.
I was thinking the same thing.
Yes, I know. So we will focus on 2019, but okay, there is a twist about 2018 that you might be interested in. The other thing is, once you determine your tax for this year, for 2019, mm-hmm, make sure you're comparing that. Like if you get a huge refund, that means you paid too much tax throughout the year and you gave the government an interest-free loan that you could have been investing and making your, you know, 8 to 10% returns on instead. So if you're getting a big tax refund, I know everyone loves that windfall, but it means that you just lost money. Adjust your W-4 so you don't make the same mistake next year.
I love how people go on Facebook and brag about how much the refund was.
Yeah,
you're an idiot.
You messed up.
Stop it.
Or last year when people were angry that they weren't getting a big refund because the government on their own adjusted people's withholdings.
That would be me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm one of the people that got not. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A lot of people got a surprise at the tax time last year and had bills.
Yeah. That's why I work five jobs. Good.
So the first thing you need to do at tax time is right now, you want to make sure you're organized. So make a checklist and collect all your required documents. I have a file folder that I keep all year long. And as the documents come in starting in January, I put them in there. I actually, on the front cover of the folder, I make a checklist of all the documents I used last year, like a W-2 from this company, a W-2 from this one, a 1099 from this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have a long list, which is good and bad. But I make sure I put that checklist on the front of my folder so I know what I'm still waiting on come the end of January. Because the worst thing you want to do is file your tax return before you have all of your information. Otherwise, you'll need to file an amended return if, like, a W-2 comes in the day after you went down to your local tax office and made that file so you could get your refund faster.
Okay.
And amended returns can't be filed electronically, so you would have... Yeah, no, they cannot. So you have to send amendments in on paper. So what's the basis of our taxes? Do you know what an AGI is, Craig?
Hold on. I can do this. Adjusted gross income.
Correct.
Yes, correct. I did it.
So what's included in your income? So let's start with your gross income. What do we need to include in income? So that would be anything that you earn, like anything that comes on a W-2, a 1099, self-employment. That means you're keeping your own records for your self-employment, like you have a home office. I love the movie The Accountant when he's telling like this cute little old lady who makes beaded necklace that she's self-employed and her kitchen's her office, her like home office space.
What?
But anyway, self-employment, you need to see the movie. It's awesome. Self-employment income would be included. K-1 income. So if you're part owner to a business, you will be issued a K-1 from that business.
Okay.
It's like a W-2, but it's showing your earnings from the business.
Gotcha.
Pass through entity. Unearned income, like dividends and interest. So if you get interest from a savings account or you're earning dividends on certain stocks within an investment portfolio, that would be unearned income. Alimony is income. Capital gains. So if you sell off a stock at the end of the year and it has a gain, you would have capital gains to pay tax on. Any retirement distributions, you would pay tax on that. Any rental income, any bonuses you get from your company. And here's a tricky one. Gambling income as well is included. And any and all other income. And so I include this one with a little asterisk. Like, you remember what took down Al Capone, right?
What, in machine guns?
No.
Gatling gun.
Yeah, no. Well, maybe, I don't know, but he went to jail because he failed to pay income taxes.
Oh.
So even if your income is illegal, the IRS still expects you to report the income and pay tax on it.
Yeah. I was going to make jokes, but then my employers would listen and think I was serious. So I'm not going to say a word.
Yeah. Maybe it's best not to.
I'm fully legit. Go ahead.
Yeah. So you're going to pay tax on all of your income unless you can reduce what's called your AGI. So and then you arrive at what's called your MAGI, or your modified adjusted gross income. So in order to reduce what your income looks like on paper, you're going to want to fund things like a traditional IRA or a traditional Roth IRA. That all comes out of generally your paycheck. So you don't necessarily see that all at one time.
Right.
You would fund an FSA to take care of medical and dental expenses. And in 2019, you could have funded up to $2,700 in there. Now it's too late to go back to 2019 there, but it's, you could plan for 2020 up to $2,750. You had the opportunity to fund a dependent care FSA. So this one's interesting. It's to pay for the care of your dependents so that you can work. You could have an HSA. So Craig, you've talked about this a number of times. Yeah. And maybe it's probably worth explaining a little bit about an HSA here. You first of all, in order to be eligible for an HSA, you have to have a qualifying high deductible health plan available.
Yep.
And then the contributions to the HSA are tax deductible and the withdrawals are tax free, so long as you use them for qualified medical expenses.
Right.
So like in 2019, you could have contributed $3,500. In 2020, that's going to rise to $3,550. Your employer may offer an HSA, but you can also start one on your own at a bank or other financial institution.
Yep.
The other things you want to do is avoid premature withdrawals from retirement plans to avoid a 10% tax penalty.
And that's at age 59 and a half?
That's right. Yep.
Okay.
Oh, here's something to talk about. Deductions versus credits. So there's a lot of confusion when people are preparing their taxes on what is a deduction and how that helps versus what's a credit. Do you know the difference?
No.
I mean, I put you on the spot. Sorry. So a deduction is going to lower your taxable income. So deductions are applied against your gross income.
See, I knew that one. What do you mean about credits?
And then the credits are a dollar for dollar deduction from your actual tax bill. So after your tax is calculated, you get basically a coupon on that.
Oh.
Yeah.
TurboTax does the whole thing for me automatically. So I assume it did something for that.
It probably does.
It probably does behind the scenes. Yeah.
So here's something interesting. A lot of people ask questions about deductions because they're used to itemizing their deductions because of either mortgage interest or tax, property tax bills. And because of this Fun Tax Cuts and Job Act, a lot of those benefits go away. Now, that's not to say they're not available to you, but it may not be worth it to itemize anymore because the standard deduction increased significantly in 2018 and again, obviously in 2019. So in 2019, it was $24,400 for married filing jointly, which is basically, if I remember correctly, it's almost double what it used to be.
Yeah, it is. That's a lot.
So in order to make it worthwhile to itemize your deductions, you need to exceed the standard deduction, which for most people is going to be challenging.
Right.
Yeah, because you have to have documentation to prove it.
If you're honest.
You have to have documentation to prove it. Right. Otherwise, when you get audited, then they'll take it away.
Right.
But some of the common deductions that you could use to itemize, if it's worth your time and worth it for you, if you have a number of these expenses, you might want to do the calculation and see if it exceeds that limit. Again, if you're filing single or you're filing head of household, the standard deduction is different. I'm just going with a peer married filing joint. For simplification. But common deductions might be student loan interest. So if you have a qualifying student loan payment, either for yourself or your child, you might be able to deduct that. charitable donations. You know, it's sad. I have seen that reports that charities are really hurting now because of the standard deduction, because people aren't getting the benefit of the deduction at the end of the year. Medical expenses are a common deduction, but here your expenses have to exceed 7.5% of your income, and only the amount that is in excess of that would qualify for the deduction.
Another reason why, just to get an HSA.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, for that. Yeah.
Property tax on any and all property you own. So it doesn't have to be just your primary residence. It would be all property. State and local sales tax. And this here, you can either use the IRS calculation tables for state and local sales tax or actual. In the past, actual has worked out for us because it might have been a year that we, for whatever reason, had to make one or two big purchases, mm-hmm. like a new vehicle might have a high tax bill. Again, you shouldn't be making these big purchases if you haven't completed your baby steps, but... or income tax, state or local sales tax, or income tax, and you can only choose one. So maybe you're in a state that has a really high income tax. You would then be able to deduct what you paid in state income tax last year on this year's taxes. Mm-hmm. Mortgage interest is another common deduction. Here's a fun one. Remember we talked about gambling winnings as income? Well, you can deduct your gambling losses, but only up to the amount of your winnings. So basically to cancel the gambling winnings out.
Well, considering more people lose than win, that's that really doesn't help at all.
It helps at all. It helps a lot because here's an example. One, we used to play bingo, you know, because I'm practically 90, I guess. so my husband one time won $2,000 playing bingo, and they have to issue you a 1099 for that.
Oh, wow.
So it shows up on your taxes. So the whole year I was keeping track of receipts to cancel out that $2,000. So then you have zero income from gambling.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We talked a little bit about self-employment expenses. Those can be taken as deductions. Again, talk to your tax advisor about that. It can be a bit tricky, including a home office. But the home office has to be 100% used for business purposes. So you can't just say, like I used the accountant movie earlier as an example, but it's actually a bad example because your kitchen table or your dining room cannot be your home office because that's used for another purpose. Mm-hmm. So they got that wrong, but as is the magic of movies, I guess.
Yeah.
So you have to have a dedicated space entirely for business use. Here's another interesting one. Educator expenses up to $250. So if you're a teacher and you need to pay for some costs out of pocket for your classroom supplies, you can deduct up to $250.
My daughter.
Yeah, it's something, not much. But, and again, all of these deductions have to add up to more than the standard deduction.
Yeah.
And then the last one I'll mention is residential energy. So you can deduct up to 30% of the installation costs for solar energy, like solar panels on your house, or a solar water heater. Now, what's not eligible here is a solar pool heater, which is sad because I just got a solar pool heater in December.
I was going to say, hey, how's Florida doing? Can't write that off, can you?
Nope. They explicitly say not pool heaters. Mm. So again, those are your common deductions. And if you have a number of these expenses, it may be worth charting it out to see if it exceeds the standard deduction. Otherwise, just do the standard. So then again, the credits. So all of those deductions go into your calculation to then determine how much tax you owe. Once that tax owed amount is calculated, let's say you'd come up with a tax liability of $25,000, just to keep things simple. Then you can see if you're eligible for any credits. So for example, there's an American Opportunity Credit, which is specifically for undergraduates and parents of undergraduates. Whoever is claiming the credit for that individual, you can't both take it. Mm-hmm. For eligible education expenses for a maximum of 4 years. So that is, it is fully intended for undergraduates. It is subject to income limits though. Right. However, it's also refundable. So if you have very low income, and even if you thought you weren't going to file a tax return, the things we mentioned today that are refundable, you might want to file a return just to get that refund.
Okay.
So if we had an American Opportunity Credit, and let's say it was $2,000, just as an example, then that would reduce your tax bill from $25,000 to $23,000 because it's a dollar for dollar reduction.
Okay.
Lifetime learning credit, that is for education expenses as well. You cannot claim both a lifetime learning and the opportunity credit. So usually you want to wait until you've exhausted the American Opportunity Credit, and then you can look at the lifetime learning credit. So it's good for students who maybe take an extra year to graduate, like they're in their fifth year of undergrad, or you're a graduate student, or you're pursuing other learning opportunities. This one is also subject to income limits, but it's not refundable.
This sounds very complicated.
It is. That's why I keep saying go to your tax advisor.
Oh, okay.
There's a child tax credit that's still available, and up to $1,400 of that is refundable.
Okay.
The tax credit is per child. So depending on how many children you have, you may get a tax credit there. We talked about child and dependent care HSAs earlier. There's a child and dependent care tax credit. Your child has to be 12 and younger, and you have to be paying for the care so that you or another caregiver can go to work. It's not refundable, but I've used this when our kids were younger to pay for like summer camps because there's no school during the summer and you need someone to watch your kid while you go to school. So summer camps can be a qualifying expense. It's not just for that though. If you it could also include someone who's like cooking for your child so that you can work, in all cases, you need to provide a tax identification number for that caregiver. And it can't be like your spouse or another child or dependent on your return. So like if your 18-year-old is watching your 11-year-old, you can't claim that you paid them for that.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. Noted.
Yeah, no, it doesn't work that way. There's also an earned income tax credit. This one you hear a lot about. It's designed for low income earners. And it also depends on the number of children on your income. And this one is fully refundable. But again, you must file a tax return in order to get that refund, even if you're not legally obligated to file a return. There's a couple more I'm just going to mention quickly. Adoption credit, that gives you a credit up to a limit, and I don't have the limit here in front of me, but for the costs of adoption during that year.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, there's a savers credit that you might get a credit for making a retirement plan or IRA contribution subject to income limits.
Mm.
The other way you can help reduce your tax bill, if, for example, you're going through your documents and you think, oh, I might be underfunding my taxes this year, you can try and make a last minute estimated tax payment to avoid penalties. I think that had to be done by January 15th, though, so okay. It might already be too late. We talked earlier about if you get a big refund, adjusting your W-4 for next year. The other thing I would mention about that, Craig, is if you are getting a refund, don't fall for those immediate refund programs with their big fees. So you go into like H&R Block or Duxton Hewitt and they say, oh, you're going to get this much of a refund. We can put it on our H&R Block prepaid card for you today.
Well, that sounds like a good deal.
Isn't that good? Yeah, it's so convenient.
You mean they're going to charge me for that?
Of course. They take a hefty chunk of your money for that, but for the convenience of you getting it today versus waiting for the IRS to direct deposit it in 2 weeks.
But J.G. Wentworth says, it's my money. I want it now.
Yeah, they also have big fees.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah.
So finally, I gave a teaser on this earlier. If listening to this triggered something and you think, oh, I didn't think about that last year when I filed my tax return for 2018. Well, that sucks. I missed out on some savings and now I paid more tax than I should have. You can go back and file an amended return for 2018 and actually for whatever previous year you want to mm-hmm. file it for to make that correction. And you can still get a refund if you're owed a refund. Now, I would not advise amending your return if you might owe a little bit, unless, legally you actually do owe them. So if you learn you had some income that you just missed, then I would certainly amend the return, but I wouldn't go backwards unless you expect to get money back.
I can tell from personal experience They will let you know if you owe them.
Yeah, money. Yeah. That's,
they have got me several years. It took me several years because I would do teach classes for the federal government in like California. Even California kept sending me a bill. I'm like, what the heck?
Oh, yeah.
They eventually find you.
Well, the problem is if you wait until they find you, then you owe them penalties and interest because they go back to the date you actually owed them. And then they count all those years as late, even though you didn't know you owed them. So it is better if you proactively go and amend it and make the correction yourself before, you know, a decade later, they come racing after you and the amount has doubled. But again, you cannot file an amended return. It's called a 1040X. I guess like it X's out your last return. It can't be electronic. You have to file it on paper. But I once worked for a tax preparing company and I did an amended return for one or two people who had done their own taxes the year before and just missed big, big adjustments. I mean, the money's owed to you. You might as well just go back and get it. And that might be something to fund your emergency fund.
It usually happened to me when I had a lot of 1099s and someone didn't send me one and I didn't keep track of it. And then all of a sudden I get a bill. I'm like, what are you talking about? I don't have anything about that. And I'm like, you know, but of course the federal government knew about it. So
they find out eventually. Yeah. It just takes a while and then you owe even more.
You really got to keep track of all your income over the year. So if you live in the world like you do, 1099s everywhere, you got to make sure you get one from everybody.
Like if you're doing these side gigs like we talked about a few episodes ago, if you're doing like Shipt or you're doing Uber or you're doing, you know, all those other things we talked about, you need to be tracking your income from that. So even if they don't give you a 1099, you're still responsible for paying tax on that income.
Even
Airbnb doesn't issue a 1099 unless you're above a certain income. Mm-hmm. It's still your responsibility to go to the Airbnb website, download the income from the year and use that as your income and track your expenses against that.
And I have numerous websites and Google ads on there. Google issues 1099s for ads. Mm-hmm. Even if you made $5.
Yeah.
That $5 with interest.
So that's what I do, Craig, is I have that file folder that I start at the beginning of the year. And if I know I'm starting a new source of income, I will write it on the front of that folder right then. So that at the end of the year, when, you know, you can't remember what happened last February, I know, that's on my checklist because I wrote it on the cover when I started doing that work.
And sometimes you have to go to them to get it from their website.
Yep.
They're not just going to mail you everything.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Anyway, that was awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome.
All right, man. This episode was jacked full of stuff. All right. Thank you, Amanda.
Thank you.
Don't forget to check out our website, rockonthemoney.com, for all the previous episodes. We have articles, show notes, everything right there, plus links directly to all of the podcast platforms where you can easily subscribe to the podcast, such as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, and many others. We really do appreciate all of your support. We have a lot of gratitude that you took the time to check us out. We really do appreciate it. Send us an email and tell us what you think to podcast@rocklandusa.com. So long, everybody. We'll see you again next time on Rock on the Money. America's Rockland USA. All opinions expressed by the host are solely their own and do not reflect the views of any company, affiliates, or advertisers. Investments or strategies mentioned in the show may not be suitable for you. Before acting on any information in the show, you should consider whether it is suitable for your particular circumstances and strongly consider seeking advice from your own financial or investment advisor.
Savings and now I paid more tax than I should have. You can go back and file an amended return for 2018 and actually for whatever previous year you want to file it for to make that correction. And you can still get a refund if you're owed a refund. Now, I would not advise amending your return if you might owe a little bit, unless, you know, legally you actually do owe them. So if you learn you had some income that you just missed, then I would certainly amend the return, but I wouldn't go backwards unless you expect to get money back.
I can tell from personal experience, they will let you know if you owe them.
Yeah.
They have got me several years. It took me several years because I would do teach classes for the federal government in like California. Even California kept sending me a bill. I'm like, what the heck?
Oh, yeah.
They eventually fine you.
Well, the problem is if you wait until they find you, then you owe them penalties and interest because they go back to the date you actually owed them. And then they count all those years as late, even though you didn't know you owed them. So it is better if you proactively go and amend it and make the correction yourself before, you know, a decade later, they come racing after you and the amount has doubled. But again, you cannot file an amended return. It's called a 1040X. Mm-hmm. I guess like it X's out your last return. It can't be electronic. You have to file it on paper. But I once worked for a tax preparing company, and I did an amended return for one or two people who had done their own taxes the year before and just missed big adjustments. I mean, the money's owed to you. You might as well go back and get it. And that might be something to fund your emergency fund.
It usually happened to me when I had a lot of 1099s and someone didn't send me one and I didn't keep track of it. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden I get a bill. I'm like, what are you talking about? I don't have anything about that. And I'm like, you know, but of course the federal government knew about it. So
they find out eventually. Yeah. It just takes a while. And then you owe even more.
You really got to keep track of all your income over the year. So if you live in the world like you do, 1099s everywhere, you got to make sure you get one from everybody.
Like if you're doing these side gigs like we talked about a few episodes ago, if you're doing like Shipt or you're doing Uber or you're doing, you know, all those other things we talked about, you need to be tracking your income from that. So even if they don't give you a 1099, you're still responsible for paying tax on that income.
Even
Airbnb doesn't issue a 1099 unless you're above a certain income. Mm-hmm. It's still your responsibility to go to the Airbnb website, download the income from the year and use that as your income and track your expenses against that.
And I have numerous websites and Google ads on there. Google issues 1099s for ads. Mm-hmm. Even if you made $5.
Yeah.
That $5 with interest.
So that's what I do, Craig, is I have that file folder that I start at the beginning of the year. And if I know I'm starting a new source of income, I will write it on the front of that folder right then. So that at the end of the year, when, you know, you can't remember what happened last February, I know, that's on my checklist because I wrote it on the cover when I started doing that work.
And sometimes you have to go to them to get it from their website.
Yep.
They're not just going to mail you everything.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Anyway, that was awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome.
All right, man. This episode was jacked full of stuff. All right. Thank you, Amanda.
Thank you.
Don't forget to check out our website, rockonthemoney.com, for all the previous episodes. We have articles, show notes, everything right there. Plus links directly to all of the podcast platforms where you can easily subscribe to the podcast, such as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, and many others. We really do appreciate all of your support. We have a lot of gratitude that you took the time to check us out. We really do appreciate it. Send us an email and tell us what you think to podcast@rocklandusa.com. So long, everybody. We'll see you again next time on Rock on the Money. America's Rockland USA. All opinions expressed by the host are solely their own and do not reflect the views of any company, affiliates, or advertisers. Investments or strategies mentioned in the show may not be suitable for you. Before acting on any information in the show, you should consider whether it is suitable for your particular circumstances and strongly consider seeking advice from your own financial or investment advisor.